3 years ago, Lori Parkhill invited me to speak at this beautiful church. And you welcomed this stranger into your midst, and you did so again last year. And so as I stand before you here this morning, I feel like I'm coming home. And so thank you. And I thank Lori, to whom I dedicate my sermon today. As we come upon Abraham, he is sitting in front of the tent which belongs to him and to his wife Sarah. The heat of the day is almost unbearable. He pulled his cloak over his head and sought shelter in the shade beneath the oak of Mamre. After some time had passed, Abraham noticed a bit of dust rising, and he heard the rustle of garments. When he pulled back his hood and looked up, he saw three men standing before him. "Please," said Abraham, bowing to the strangers in a gesture of respect and friendship, "come, cool yourself here in the shade. Your feet will be washed and a meal brought to you to restore you for the rest of your journey. And if you are pleased, perhaps you will stay with us for a time and visit my family." "Thank you," said one. "As you wish," replied another. "So be it," said the third, and the tallest among them. At that moment, Abraham realized who the strangers were, but it didn't matter. He hurried off and gathered three bushels of flour. These he brought to Sarah and asked her to knead the flour into bread. Abraham slaughtered his finest calf and had his servant prepare it. And when the bread and meat were ready to eat, they were laid out on a table with milk and cream beneath the oak of Mamre. The three visitors, the three strangers, sat and ate. During this past year, I, along with all of us, have been immersed in images of people fleeing, escaping war and persecution, crowding into barely habitable places where they aren't welcome, casting their fate to flimsy boats crossing dangerous waters, crowding across waters and borders, risking everything for an uncertain future. This is not a new story. For many of us here in this room, we need only go back a generation or two, if that, to recall similar stories in our own families, amongst our own friends. And if you'll allow me to speak personally, as a Jew, I go back to the core narrative that has shaped my people, starting with Abraham migrating away from his home to a place he does not know, continuing to the formative experience of the Exodus from Egypt, and then after so many centuries of wanderings and expulsions and seeking refuge, to a place finally to live and to be. The sacred texts and annual rituals of my co-religionists continually remind us that we were strangers and that we know the heart of the stranger. It is an indelible part of our collective consciousness. And our texts, my texts, continually insist that we must welcome the stranger. It's as deep as it gets. It's in the heart and the guts of Jewish experience. an experience I want to share with you this morning so that you will understand that welcoming the stranger is so very important to me. In the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, the injunction to welcome the stranger, the ger, occurs 36 times, and some say 46 times. And that kind of repetition is not coincidental, nor is it incidental. We are directed to not oppress the stranger, to not violate the rights of the stranger, to celebrate with the stranger, to not exclude the stranger. In some passages of Scripture, the commandment comes as both the beginning and the end of a list of other commandments, punctuating its centrality. So why is this seen as so very important? One thread of thought through centuries of texts and commentaries is about vulnerability. That the stranger is in many ways alone and therefore especially vulnerable. And we therefore have a special responsibility to treat them with fairness and compassion. In 13th century Spain, a philosopher by the name of Nachmanides wrote about this vulnerability being both psychological and political. That since a stranger is on his or her own, we must extend to the stranger a special kind of emotional support. And we must be prepared to defend the stranger from injustice. In our own time, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who was the chief rabbi of England, also writes about this vulnerability. And then he goes on further to say, not only must the stranger not be wronged, the stranger must be loved. We are, in fact, commanded to love the stranger. And we're commanded to love our neighbor. And that's not always so easy, is it? But these injunctions are not meant to be easy. They are meant to challenge us to be our very best selves and to live the lives we are meant to live. Beyond loving, beyond protecting the vulnerable, is the deeply resonant issue of our own identification with the stranger. That is the part that Jews recount every year at Passover and again throughout the year. Again and again, our words from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, why should you not hate the stranger? Because you once stood where the stranger stands now. You know the heart of a stranger because you were once a stranger in the land of Egypt. If you are human, so is the stranger. If you are less than human, so are you. I made you into the world's archetypal strangers so that you would fight for the right of the stranger. So you will fight for the right of the stranger. Why? Because the stranger is me. Which brings up me to one more point. We are all strangers. In the book of Leviticus, it says, "The land is mine. You are but strangers resident with me." We are temporary residents on this earth, charged with the responsibility to care for it and to care for each other. And so we need to approach this whole stranger issue with deep identification, and with deep humility. During this past year, I've been immersed in this issue of welcoming the stranger. I have been working with fellow members of Temple Beth Elohim in Wellesley to resettle Syrian refugees' families as part of a coalition that I know you are a part of as well. If only our government had allowed us to do more, we could have resettled more of these strangers. But we have not given up hope. So what have I learned this year? I've learned how complex and wrenching it is to uproot your life and come to a strange new country. I've learned how resilient many, though not all, people are. I've learned not to romanticize people just because they are refugees. They are human beings with strengths, with quirks, with personalities, and they've all experienced trauma and carry that with them in so many different ways. And also during this past year, in reflecting my own commitment and where it comes from, I noticed that none of our sacred texts about welcoming the stranger have caveats attached. They don't instruct us to welcome the stranger only if he or she looks like me, or speaks like me, or worships like me. It doesn't say to welcome the stranger only if he or she doesn't make us feel uncomfortable. It just says welcome the stranger. And in fact, when you think about it, a stranger is quite likely to look or speak or worship or act differently from us, even in all of our variety, because they are a stranger. And though, of course, we share core human needs and feelings and other experiences, they are likely to be different from us in some ways, and that's a good thing. And what else have I learned? That we can draw a great deal of hope and inspiration from our own community. People are deeply, strongly, generously, and persistently interested in welcoming refugees. It has struck a deep chord for many. And that interest is not fleeting. It is strong and sustained. And I feel incredibly fortunate to have witnessed it. And what else? I've been thinking a lot about what welcoming the stranger means at this historical moment in our history as a nation. And I'm with philosopher Nachmanides on this one. The answer is political as well as psychological. It is essential to welcome people, to embrace them, to support them, to accompany them through the challenges of life. However, now welcoming the stranger has to mean standing up for them boldly and publicly, protecting them against hatred and xenophobia and Islamophobia, and advocating for them loudly and often wherever we can. And certainly it's about doing everything in our power to oppose those who, rather than welcoming the stranger, stand for deporting the stranger, or scapegoating the stranger, or bullying the stranger. And you all know who I'm talking about. It is difficult this year to look outward and not sometimes feel despair. We have witnessed unspeakable tragedy and terror in the world. We have heard hateful, deeply disturbing political discourse unlike any that I can remember. Who of us at some point over the last year or so has not said, "Has the world gone mad?" And yet so many wonderful people have never given in to the dark night of despair, never retreated to a place of nothing we can do about it. But there is something we can do about it. For we know that the actions of one person can make an overwhelming difference. We can begin by being engaged in the critical work of hospitality, one stranger, one refugee at a time. There's a wonderful story in Jewish lore about a man who stood before God with a broken heart from all the pain and injustice in the world. "Dear God," he cried out, "look at all the suffering, the anguish, and distress in your world. Why don't you send help for once?" And God responded, "I sent you." We, each of us, must see ourselves as being sent. Each of us has a unique contribution to make to the world. We are a compassionate people who care about others. Acting with loving kindness binds us together as a community and binds us across time on those whose shoulders we stand. May it always be so. I invite you now to join in a moment of silent reflection and prayer.